From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. As amazing as the technological changes are that we see today, they pale beside what Americans experienced in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The telegraph and telephone brought instant communication. Recording technology moved music out of the concert hall onto the gramophone. The automobile shrank distance. Radio introduced the age of mass communication. And one of the greatest inventions of all was Thomas Edison's light bulb. It changed our concept of night. Ernest Friedberg tells the story in his new book, The Age of Edison, Electric Light and Invention of Modern America. Ernest Friedman is a professor of history at the University of Tennessee. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's great to be here.
Take us back to the pre-electric light bulb time. There was light at night. What was it?
That's right. Gaslight was the predominant form of light. In the 19th century, people were hungry for light. People were moving into the cities. It was much darker because of pollution, coal smoke, and so forth. So there was a great market for light. Sperm whales just about went extinct in the search for whale oil. And then gaslight took its place. And in inner city cores and places that could afford it, gaslight was pretty prevalent.
Why was the introduction of electric light such a big change, since there already were ways that there was light in cities?
Well, for one reason, because gaslight was terrible. I mean, it was an awful technology. People were so hungry for light, they put up with these terrible side effects. Gaslight would suck the oxygen out of the room and replace it with this noxious fumes. Often they put the gas tanks in poor neighborhoods, and these would explode, and it was very poisonous. So people, embraced the electric light because it was clean, it was no flame, and they loved the clarity of the light. Instead of the yellow flickering flame, which looks nostalgic to us now, but back then people immediately recognized how great a steady, bright light was.
Well, Thomas Edison was the Wizard of Menlo Park even before he invented the light bulb, right? He was already a well-known inventor.
Yes, he made his first fortune in some improvements to the telegraph, where he started as a young man, and then as you mentioned, the phonograph was his great invention that won him the accolade of being the wizard, and he entered this electric light contest actually in a crowded field and quite late. There were many, many people developing a working incandescent light bulb right at the same time.
And you point out in the book, as others have, that it was not as though he just sat there and came up with this out of his head. He actually built on the work of others. There was a lot of other information that he used to come up with the invention of the incandescent light bulb.
Absolutely. Others were working along the same lines of a vacuum bulb and a carbon filament. What Edison did was take it to a much more complicated level by working out a lot of the details about how to distribute this over a broader space. There were people who had working incandescent light bulb patents a year before Edison, bulbs that looked very much the same as Edison's. But Edison was thinking about how to take on the gas companies. You know, he was not just making a science experiment, but a marketable product.
And they didn't roll over easily, as we'll find out in a moment. I'm talking to Ernie Friedberg. He's the author of The Age of Edison, Electric Light and the Invention of Modern America. Edison was not only an inventor, he was a pretty good promoter too, wasn't he? Pretty savvy about getting it out there.
That was a very important part. Edison had to do a lot. I mean, he was great with the press. He loved to tell folksy tales and invite them over and watch what he was doing in the lab. And it was important, I think, for him in terms of his success to cultivate this idea that he was sort of a wizard. I think that led investors to take a chance on him. They figured if he could do the phonograph, he could do anything. So when he decided to enter this crowded field with the light bulb, stock prices for gas tumbled around the world because people thought, well, if Edison says he can do it, I guess it can be done.
Well, he introduced it, but it wasn't as though it worked perfectly right off the bat, right? There were still issues, even though he had the core concept right.
Yes. It was a slow, gradual process. I think we like to think of it as the eureka moment where the bulb was created, but in fact, there was the bulb that lasted for 3 hours and the bulb that lasted for 14 and the bulb that lasted for 40. And he had a great unveiling on New Year's Eve, 1879, and everybody thought the bulb had been invented, but those bulbs lasted 40 hours and were gone too. So it really took several years of much, much work to perfect the technology. And I guess we're still working on perfecting it.
Yes. I mean, it's hard to imagine, I think, today, but it was just regarded as a miracle. People were just dazzled by the light bulb, weren't they?
They were. And it was one of the exciting things about researching the book was to go back and look at the moment when the light came on in one town after another. And, you know, the whole town would show up for the flipping of the ceremonial switch, and there'd be bands playing and, you know, a lot of excitement. People really recognized the fact that they were somehow moving into a modern world.
Yeah. And you tell about some of the really interesting things from the early days of electric lights that I had never heard of before. Some towns and places created these giant light towers. They weren't like street lights. They were up really high, and they were to shine light over a really large area. It was almost like they were creating a mini sun there.
Right, and that's a different technology. That's the arc light, which Edison was not working on the arc light. This was a light that was so powerful. You know, think about the arc welding light. How incredibly bright that is. So this was a similar technology that was developed in the years before the incandescent bulb. But it was just, you couldn't bring it indoors because it was just overwhelming. But people did try to create these artificial moons over their towns and turned out to be one of those interesting bad ideas.
The electric light you can't think of without electricity. Was it the electric light bulb? Was it Edison that kind of drove the desire to begin to wire everything and bring electricity out?
Yes. When it was done, Edison predicted this is, you know, light is just part of this. Once you get a wire in your house, there's no end to the other things we're going to be able to do with heating and so forth, and DC motors were being developed. So he recognized the fact that this was part of a broader electrical revolution. But I think it was really the hunger for light that led people to make the massive investment it took to get the wires into their house in the first place. If you had told somebody, you need to do this so you can have a toaster, you know, I don't know if people would have gone for it.
But light was obviously.
But light was something obvious people really felt the need for, and they felt the limitations of the light that was available to them.
We're talking about Thomas Edison and the Age of Edison with Ernest Freeburg, who just wrote the book called The Age of Edison. We're at 206-543-5869. If you've got a question about it, 800-289-5869. You can write to us, conversation at kuow.org. Now, you can see photographs these days in the developing world of wires being strewn kind of crazily over in some cities, and it looks like it's incredibly hazardous. But in fact, the wire nuisance, as it was called, goes back to the early days of electricity here, too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. There were no regulations at all. So especially with the arc light companies that had very, very powerful wires, they started to string them up. Every city was eager to have as much light as possible, so they started to grant franchises to anybody who wanted to invest a fairly modest amount of money in having a dynamo and a string of lights. So you'd have, in an average city, 8 or 9, 10 or 12 rival companies, each throwing their wires without any sort of regulation or guidance. They throw them right over people's houses. They tack them to trees. And pretty soon they started to interact with the wires that were already there, the telegraph wires and burglar alarm wires. And it created lots of sparks, lots of fires.
And some gruesome deaths, which were highly publicized at the time. There became a kind of a fear in some way of this electricity.
I could have written the entire book on excruciating
fear of
deaths. Yes, there were just endless stories of people, especially the linemen who were up there, you know, very often not knowing what wires were live or not, getting caught in the wires, electrocuted, really dangling over the public square, roasting to death with the audience.
It's a description
watching.
You have of an incident like that, and sparks coming from this man's mouth as he was up there, and they couldn't get him down. And of course, that created a lot of fear. So I guess the PR machinery had to go into effect to sort of make people think that this was safe, right?
Yes, absolutely. And also the insurance companies. They weren't so much concerned about the loss of life at that point, but they were concerned about the loss of property. So the insurance companies were really the leaders in forcing the electric companies to impose some kind of order on their business. And the electricians recognized the fact that they were, you know, about to convince Americans that electricity was just too dangerous to try.
And they succeeded. But there were a lot of concerns early on. You talk about how social reformers felt threatened by the electric light. Why did they feel threatened by it?
Well, there was a concern that this was drawing people out of their dim houses. That was one concern about this, that working people coming home, because the light was something that did not spread very rapidly at all. It was really not until the 1930s that about 70% of urban homes were wired. So for 50 years in this period, there was electric light, but it was in the saloon or in the amusement park or in the downtown. Whereas if you went home to your home, you'd have a smoky lamp and a dim surrounding. So there was some concern that if you
far away from those temptations, we might find where the electric light was. So it became associated.
You have to democratize light and make it available to everybody. And that way, you know, this was considered to be, over the course of 50 years, it came to be assumed that access to abundant artificial light was sort of a American birthright.
I'd never thought of this, but of course, with the electric light, you could have the factories open longer, and it kind of became a labor issue also. People were concerned about it extending the workday.
That's right. Right at the time when labor was trying to push for a shorter day, the 10-hour day movement and the 8-hour day movement, capitalists recognized that this was a tool for keeping their machines running all the time. They'd made a massive investment in these machines, and the more they could keep them going, the better. So many predicted at the time that this was actually going to turn out to be a terrible blow to labor. And especially to children. There were many children working the night shifts in mills, glass factories, box factories. So the progressive reformers were very interested in highlighting not just the abuse of child labor, but it seemed especially abusive to be having them work at midnight under the electric light.
Well, just as today we worry about the iPhone and how distracting it is and how it's affecting our brains, you talk about America's leading psychologist, G. Stanley Hall. Mm. He was concerned that artificial lights would have a big impact on human development. He even said it could warp the soul. What was he talking about there?
Well, there was a lot of concern about how this would affect people's behavior when it arrived. There were some great arguments for the advantage of this, but Hall said this. He said, God has given us twilight in order to bring out certain aspects of our spiritual nature, that this is the zone in life where we dream, where we see shadows, where we think differently, and that if we instead miss the twilight and just flip on the lights when it starts to get a little dark, we're going to stunt, you know, there's something we are so connected to the rhythms of light and dark in some deep way that is being short-circuited by this process.
We're talking about Thomas Edison. Ernie Frager was it's from the book called The Age of Edison, The Electric Light and the Invention of Modern America. Frank's with us today from Renton, and he wants to make sure we're aware of the role of another big person in this development. Frank, go right ahead with your question. Frank, are you with us? Well, I can see that what Frank wanted to talk about was Tesla, and he is the person who had a really crucial role in the development of electricity. How did his contribution make what Edison did possible?
Well, it actually it built on it and actually surpassed Edison. Something I don't talk about a lot in my book because I'm really more focused on light than I am on the spread of electricity and power. Mm-hmm. Tesla understood things about electric power that Edison could not have imagined. He was really remarkable that way, and he was the one who helped with in an alliance with Westinghouse to develop the potential of AC power. Mm-hmm. So Edison really, as important a role as he played in getting electric light started. By 10 years into this process, he was out of the business, and AC power had replaced DC.
He was the DC man. It was the whole battle between DC and AC.
That's right.
And what was going to be safer, not a whole.
And Edison, bet on the wrong horse, partly because he had economic investment in his DC system, partly because he was he was sort of blinded by his rivalry with Tesla and Westinghouse, but also because that AC power was at that point the thing that was electrocuting all these people we were just talking about. It's far more dangerous, and so his view was AC power can never be made safe. Wrong about that.
Wrong about that one.
Wrong about that one, and it made in the end that pushed him out of the business.
Well, we might assume that the lights went on and that was the end of the story. But as you recount, it took many, many years to get into the country, to get into the homes of everyone. People like Robert Louis Stevenson were nostalgic for gaslight. And the gas companies didn't take this lying down either, did they?
They didn't. Once they had the competition, they got very swift and savvy, and they started to invent themselves and actually improve the quality of gaslight a great deal between 1870 and the 1920s. They developed incandescent burners using some of the same ideas of the incandescent light bulb, and they just learned to deliver the gas much more efficiently and effectively. So it really was, if you were on a modest budget, in the early 20th century, chances are good you would still be burning gas. Electricity was really a luxury until about the 1920s.
Well, today we're moving past the incandescent light bulb, but we still have light bulbs with us. Thank you so much for coming by, Ernie. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's been fun.
Ernest Freeburg, professor of history and also the author of The Age of Edison, Electric Light and the Invention of Modern America. David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Hannah Byrne and Amber Cortez. And we have with us today the new Pope, Pope Francis I, from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds. Thanks to Jack Walters for being our engineer.